Hello and welcome to another episode of Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. My guest today is Wendy Kopp, CEO and co-founder of Teach for All, a global network of independent organizations in 60 countries across every region of the world that are working to develop collective leadership to ensure all children have the opportunity to fulfill their potential. Prior to launching Teach for All in 2007, Wendy founded and led Teach for America, which has proven to be an unparalleled source for long-term leadership for expanding opportunity in the United States. She led the development of Teach for All to be responsive to the initiative of social entrepreneurs around the world who were determined to adapt this approach in their own countries. Wendy has been recognized with numerous awards, including the Skoll Award for Social Entrepreneurship and the Schwab Foundation's Outstanding Social Entrepreneur Award. Whilst I'm sitting here in the Conduit in London, Wendy is joining us from the United States. Don't we love the power of technology? It's wonderful to have you with us today virtually, Wendy. So welcome.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So for those who don't know, tell me about Teach for All. What was the journey that led to its inception and what's its core purpose?
Well, we're a network of independent, locally led organizations in 60 countries and growing, with a global organization as well, working to accelerate progress across our network. And what brings us all together is the purpose of developing collective leadership to ensure all kids fulfill their potential. I think what drew all of us to this work is, first of all, a commitment to tackling the fact that the circumstances of kids' birth predict their outcomes. But then also just the recognition that that is a very big, complex, systemic challenge. There's no one thing that's going to solve it. More great teachers alone will not solve that problem. There's no one thing, right? It's going to take many things changing. And that means it's going to take a lot of leadership, meaning people at every level of the education system and policy and really around the whole ecosystem around kids exerting leadership towards a shared purpose of all kids thriving. And so our network is making a really intentional effort to cultivate that leadership.
And tell us what your theory of change is. What does that leadership model lead to and how does it enable the kind of qualitative changes that you're seeking to achieve?
Well, each of our network partners kind of adapts a unifying approach to their context. So they each recruit promising leaders, people of all different academic interests and career interests, and they ask them to commit at least 2 years to teach in their country's marginalized communities. They invest a lot in the development of those teachers in pursuit of both really important immediate outcomes for kids, of course, and also knowing that those 2 years are transformative for the teachers themselves. They change their mindsets, their beliefs, their priorities, and essentially they are foundational for the kind of leadership we need. And, you know, these teachers never leave the work. The vast majority of them continue working to address this issue, whether from inside classrooms or different levels of the education system or policy or beyond. And through their work, they end up inspiring and supporting the leadership of a lot of others, you know, their students, the students' families, other teachers in their schools. So that's kind of the big idea and, you know, what all of us are doing all across this network.
So this approach of building something that's distributed across 60 countries around the world obviously presents an enormous, is both emblematic of an ability to scale, because that's a little shy of a third of the countries in the world in which you're currently operating, but also must present a ton of challenges to try and do something at the scale that you're doing. So tell us both how you've managed to get to this level of global expansion as you have and some of the challenges you encountered along the way.
You know, what's interesting is, I mean, I started out, as you mentioned earlier, focused on my own country over here in the United States. And I really wasn't thinking about the anything about the rest of the world or about the potential of this idea to, you know, have applicability in other countries. But what led to Teach for All's development was that about 15 years ago, there was something in the water in the rest of the world. And within 1 year, 13 different people in 13 different countries expressed interest in making it happen in their countries. Actually, there was an adaptation in the UK, Teach First. And, you know, we were kind of trading notes and all, but even then it hadn't really occurred to us that in India and Chile and China and very diverse contexts around the world, this could make sense. And so when we started hearing from those folks and, you know, they were asking for help, we decided we should be responsive to them. And that's what led ultimately, not only to the launch of Teach for All, but to its design as a network of independently led organizations. And I think that's what's, well, we've learned a lot through the process, let's just say, but I think it's just been so powerful. Like, it's clearly, if we were sitting over here in another country trying to make this happen in other countries around the world, it would never, I don't think that would have worked or scaled. Like, it's the fact that there are people drawn to this same idea, you know, from their own countries who have assumed leadership and ownership over making it happen, together with the fact that we have this kind of global platform that enables all of us to learn from each other. And I think we've learned a lot about the power of that kind of cross-border learning and sharing.
I'm interested in the course of your career because you've been so central to thinking and then rethinking questions around education. What do you think has changed in the last 1 to 2 decades in how we've conceived of education, both in the United States, but also how we've thought about this as you've rolled out this model globally? And no discipline stays the same, disciplines evolve, but my sense is in this one in particular, there's been some really important sea changes. What have you witnessed?
You know, about 8 years into Teach for All, and we'd grown from 2 partners in the US and the UK to 40 in 40 different countries. And, you know, there was just a lot bubbling up across the network. And there was a big question. I mean, we had come together initially around this vision of one day all children will have the chance to attain an excellent education. And there were so many good questions across the network saying, what do we really mean by excellent education? And so we decided to come together to think about that question. And actually, we asked ourselves, you know, by 25 years from now, what are we working towards together? And because we framed the question that way, we started looking at, in fact, where will the world be in 25 years? And considering how much the economy is changing, how much the planet is degrading, just the increasingly complex challenges all around us. And it was just very striking to all of us engaged in that process that if the students in our classrooms today are not developing as leaders who can navigate a changing economy and solve increasingly complex problems, there's no hope for any of our aspirations for peace and sustainability and inclusiveness. And so we came together around a different vision, actually, a vision around all kids having the education, support, and opportunity to shape a better future for themselves and all of us. And honestly, over the last, I guess, 7 years since re-articulating that vision statement, everything has changed for us. You know, we realized we needed to rethink all of our teacher development frameworks as an example, because they had all been developed looking at in which classrooms are academic outcomes moving the most. And we realized we need to ask a different question, which is what is at work in classrooms where students are developing in their agency, their awareness of themselves and of the world, their sense of connectedness with each other, their sense of well-being, and their academic mastery and ability to apply that knowledge to solve real-world problems and think critically. And when we started analyzing what was at work in those classrooms where students are developing holistically, we realized, you know, we would need a different teacher development framework. And that's just the beginning, right? Like, we need to measure outcomes differently, et cetera. So yes, I think a lot has shifted.
Do you think, I mean, it's almost become a cliche, but the kind of COVID impact and a shift to different online form of collaborations, do you think that that is going to, we're going to look back in a decade and say that that has permanently impacted the way we learn and the formats that we consider to be acceptable venues for learning? Or do you think it's just going to be regarded as a kind of blip in history?
I do think, I mean, we think a lot across Teach for All about what new possibilities have emerged in this era. And I do think that one of them is the fact that the world's educators have gotten over the inertia around leveraging technology, and we're seeing the ways in which that really can make teaching and learning easier and more accessible and more personalized. I think there are other shifts as well. You know, we saw that where kids kept learning, teachers enlisted students in essentially partnering with them to figure out how to do it. And that level of like shifting the relationship between students and teachers is so crucial. You know, we saw teachers engaging, especially for early years kids, like parents, far more deeply in education. We saw them centering social emotional development and well-being. You know, we saw them enlisting kids and solving problems today in their schools and communities. And so I think it's on us. I think the question is still, you know, I think it's still an open question to your question, like, will this be a blip or not? I hope not. You know, we're feeling like we need to really sustain and spread these kind of mindset shifts in order to accelerate progress towards this vision that we're all working towards. And, you know, I think this system wasn't working, at least certainly for the most marginalized kids, it wasn't working before COVID. And of course, the COVID era has exacerbated the challenge. And we desperately need to transform the system. And I do think there are a lot of new possibilities in this era that we can leverage in order to do that.
Do you think the birth and meteoric growth of AI and everything associated with AI has, I'm sure there's a nuanced answer to this that you're about to deliver, but has reshaped how we consider learning and how we consider appropriate ways to both acquire and analyze information? And has it net been problematic and negative for the space, or empowering and useful for the space, particularly in the way you think about your particular approach to education, which I think has a series of really important pro-social outcomes, and it's not just education for education's sake?
Well, I've spent some time talking with some extraordinarily brilliant and engaged educators across our network who are among those on the forefront of educational technology about this question of AI. And I know from talking to them, I mean, I'm far from the world's expert on that question. I'll give it a go, but I think I'm not your best source. I mean, first of all, I'll just say, I think actually, if anything has become clear in this era, it's, you know, teaching is a very relational process. I mean, it's not become clear in this era. I mean, this has probably been clear for, you know, hundreds of decades. But in all of our teacher studies, I mean, it's very interesting, you know, when you try to assess, like, what are the characteristics that differentiate the most effective teachers? Their relationalism, you know, the extent to which they're building relationships with students, with others in the school buildings, with teachers, with other parents, et cetera. Like, that is a huge differentiator. And I think that says a lot about what is at work in the process of teaching and learning. I guess one of the risks I've heard our teachers talk about with AI is that because it's based on big aggregate data sets of, you know, looking at what the past tells us, you know, I guess the question is just, will that lead us to meet all the individual needs that present themselves in classrooms and account for all the dimensions of the issues? Like, you know, did the kids in this classroom have breakfast this morning or lunch? You know, there's so many different factors that to take into account. And So we just need to consider those risks, I guess.
There's a big movement to try and have children in particular start thinking about lives of purpose or acquiring the skills to lead more impactful lives, build more meaningful careers, ones which are focused on the benefits of others and society as a whole, not just your own individual advancement. Are there both skills clues or content clues or methodological approaches that you think best equip children to start making choices that move them in, I think, what we probably all agree is a desirable direction in this regard?
I love your question. I mean, when I think about the state of the world, you know, the polarized state of the world and all the crises that we have in front of us, you know, literally my biggest thought is, as educators, we have the biggest role to play, you know, like how the kids in our classrooms today are developing and whether or not they are ready to shape a better future for themselves and all of us, right? Like to take it on. I mean, we need to figure out how to develop a generation of people who are just all about that if we're going to have any hope of meeting all of our aspirations. So I think it's such the right question. It's the question that we're trying to answer across Teach for All, right? Like, you know, what is at work in classrooms where students are developing that way? You know, I think the outcomes I went through earlier around, like, how do we develop students' sense of agency and connectedness and well-being? I mean, these are all critical questions, you know, and I do think, I guess a couple things come to mind. First of all, we've seen that the key to developing students in that way will be developing ourselves in that way. Like we need to unlearn however we were taught in the old system and learn a different way of sort of being, because it's one huge, almost virtuous cycle, right? Like we're not going to operate one way as adults and develop students a different way. And so we think about this in terms of, you know, well, collective leadership development. How do we develop a big movement to develop leadership in that direction?
I want to switch a moment and focus a little bit, because people who listen to these conversations are interested in the substance of what you're trying to achieve, but they're also interested in your own entrepreneurial journey and where you are in the organization. And so it would be, I think, useful to kind of do a little bit of kind of horizon scanning and say, in 5 years hence, what did you hope that Teach for All would be? What I suspect that you're not a person who sort of sets quarterly goals, or you do, but you try and achieve them, but you're thinking towards the future. What would TFA be in 5 years' time if it were to meet or exceed your most ambitious plans?
Well, we are focused on, I guess I would say, three big agendas. You know, one is to grow the numbers and of extraordinary and diverse leaders all over the world who are channeling their energy into marginalized communities and working towards changing the system in those communities so that all kids thrive. And in order to do that, we're working to grow our network. We're working to support network partners to scale with quality. And so I would assume that we'll be in many more countries and that we'll bring in, you know, tens of thousands of more leaders over time, right? So that's one piece. A second is we are working to reorient teaching and learning towards this purpose that we've been discussing. We're in the midst of supporting the spread of a new approach to teacher development that does start from the perspective of supporting teachers to unlearn how we were taught and to embrace a different orientation and set of mindsets, you know, seeing students as whole people who can lead, seeing ourselves as learners, seeing the challenges that play out in our classrooms and communities as systemic in their roots rather than as problems inherent in kids and communities, to see the assets in communities, and then to act accordingly, like a whole different set of teacher actions and outcomes emerge from teachers developing that orientation. And we're also working within this to foster climate consciousness all over our network, to and to support teachers and students to understand the changing nature of the world of work so that they get on a path to shaping meaningful careers, in light of all the changes happening in the economy. So that's our second big thought. I mean, I hope we'll be teaching differently and learning differently, even by 5 years from now. And then thirdly, we're working to build a deeply interconnected global community that, you know, of teachers and educators and innovators and entrepreneurs and staff members who are learning from each other. I think probably the very biggest learning of this global journey of ours has been just how eerily similar the issues are that we're addressing from place to place, meaning like so many diverse cultures and contexts, and yet the roots of inequity are so similar. And it means the solutions are much more shareable than we've assumed. And so we know local leadership is the key to transformation, right? Without locally rooted people, I mean, nothing will change in a sustainable way. And yet we've also seen those local leaders can move so much faster if they're exposed to what's being learned and what's working in other places. And so we're working to foster that within education, which to this point has really been a much more kind of siloed enterprise. So if we add that all up, you know, we're working to grow the force of locally rooted and globally informed leaders who will transform education. I'm working in deep partnership with many others, of course. But that's the agenda.
One kind of more abstract question. When you start viewing education from a kind of impact or an outcomes prism, it can produce, intentionally or not, a slightly sort of utilitarian approach to education, which is you are learning because you want to learn how to get to net zero, how to install solar panels, how to build societies with greater racial equity, what's the best available data in reducing violence against women, what are the most interesting ways to provide microfinance to the poor so as to improve both their available income and their access to nutrition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a space for, and would you be supportive of, a sort of non-utilitarian, non-impact-oriented approach to education, which is sort of learning for its own sake, slightly less programmatic? And is there a danger that we, in the quest to do the things that you and I care passionately about, turn education into something that perhaps inadvertently shuts down creativity or interdisciplinary approaches or the pursuit of obscure, inconsequential facts about ancient Greek texts, but which may themselves potentially lead to a more rich life and possibly a more impactful life? But if it doesn't lead to the latter, it's not necessarily a disaster.
I mean, I think we desperately need creativity, and we certainly need interdisciplinary thinking. But I guess, you know, and of course we need people. I definitely don't think we should be tracking people into whatever the masterminds think they should be doing, right? Like, I think we need every individual out there asking themselves, like, you know, given everything I know and my strengths and what I'm seeing in the communities and world around me, you know, what do I want to put my energy into? But I also think we should be developing a sense of, I mean, as we say, connectedness, like empathy, recognition of the connectedness of ourselves, you know, of humanity and the planet. And I would hope that sense would influence people's decisions about then where to put their energy.
Another sort of kind of triage question, but a lot of data says the earlier you make your interventions, the greater the developmental yardsticks. And one of the, you know, most reliable predictors of warding off poverty is investment in early childhood education, and that then equips people for lifelong learning, etc. And in worlds of limited resources and trying to be focused on the most optimal outcomes. Do you think that we should be making those sorts of prioritizations of sort of taking the longitudinal period of how of a kind of learning journey and saying, if I only have X amount of resources to invest, I should be doing it here? Or do you think in some ways that's false dichotomies and we should be thinking about things differently?
I always think about trying to tell a parent that all you need to do is worry about your kid until they're five. Every year matters, right? And I think the right question is actually, are we prioritizing correctly between education and other matters? You know, like if we were investing much more in education, we could spend much less elsewhere. So yeah, I think there are many downsides to that question, you know, to that approach.
People who are listening to this, who feel inspired by your example, see what you've done and Teach for All, but also a Teach for America, and who want to build a career in the education space, which seeks to achieve some of the things that you have done throughout your career. What should they do? How should they get started? What are some advice that you could give them that will take them along that path and become kind of fellow warriors in your space?
Well, my first thought is consider teaching. Consider channeling your energy into classrooms. And I say that both because, you know, the world needs every additional person who's willing to go to great extents to meet the individual and extra needs of kids and to make up for the weaknesses in today's system for as many years as we can have them in the classroom. And at the same time, also because I've just seen the power of teaching for informing thoughts about what needs to happen next. You know, there's a growing body of research that looks at what happens to the people who commit to these Teach for All organizations and, you know, what's different about them 2 years later than the people who were right on the admissions line but didn't do these programs. And those studies have shown us just how transformational it is to teach and how much this very diverse group of folks, right? Like some of the most privileged people in their countries and some of the people who've experienced the inequities they're addressing in the classroom, right? So very diverse group, but they move significantly in their belief in the potential of kids and communities, in their belief in their own potential to make a difference, in their understanding of the nature of the problem and the solution. Like they move towards recognizing the adaptive nature of the challenge. They recognize that it's a very complex issue that has multiple roots. And those are the kinds of leaders we need, right? And so I would just say, think about, you know, getting in at the base of the system first before trying to change it from other vantage points, because your ideas about what needs to change will shift a lot.
I have a final question, and that really relates to these radical changes that we're seeing, mostly driven by technology, but also driven by broader structural forces, climate being a very important part of it, but AI that we alluded to earlier being a big one, is entire swaths of our economy are changing in ways that are far more rapid than any models that we anticipated would have suggested. Entire industries, transport, retail, but not just those, radiography, are all changing and disappearing. And new industries and new forms of employment are emerging in different geographies, requiring different skills with different distributional implications and also different pathways to improvement. And that requires, I suspect, a much more agile and nimble approach to education, and one which also finds people later in their lives and hopes to guide them in more productive endeavors when what they previously were equipped to do seems no longer either possible or their skills are no longer totally apposite or relevant. How are you responding to this moment in the way you think about what you do and what you deliver?
So I would say two things. First of all, I mean, what you're articulating is kind of the you know, it's what necessitates our thinking about education and its purpose differently, right? Like, we need to be preparing students to navigate uncertainty and shape a better future, right? To navigate the changing economy, to solve these problems. And that requires something different from fostering a narrow set of academic outcomes in a way that could actually undermine students' agency, right? Like, we expect kids to be absorbing like passive receptacles of information in so many of the schools around the world. And when you're doing that for however many years, it's hard to turn on a dime and start generating new possibilities and you know, learning new things, et cetera. So that's the fundamental thing. Like, I think often we try to band-aid this problem. We get kids through school and then we figure out, okay, then how do we transition from school to work? And we just focus on the band-aid instead of saying, let's actually rethink the education system so that kids are growing and developing in a more agile and adaptable way that's far more conducive to their fostering their own lifelong learning. So I think that's the most foundational aspect. At the same time, I mean, we are launching, have launched a Future of Work initiative, which is all about, you know, increasing the exposure of our teachers to the changing world of work, and then also direct to students, you know, giving them more exposure and access to the changing world of work so that we can, in fact, build the digital skills, the STEM skills, et cetera, that will be required.
As a social entrepreneur myself and a person who won the Scholar Award, I think, at the same year you did, and lived a life where try to lead by example, but do things that are sort of transformative, but also had a sense that there's nothing particularly unique and exceptional about what we've done, that there's an entire generation of people who are, with the right sets of circumstances and desires, able to do precisely this and join this kind of movement. What sort of leadership advice would you give people who are early on in their journey and trying to build something which is capable of tackling not just a symptom, but a system? How should you be thinking about leadership and building and movement building, not just trying to tackle symptoms?
Gosh, that is a really huge question. I'm trying to think of how to come at it. I mean, over time, I guess I've really come to think a lot about the notion of, you know, what we call collective leadership, like this idea that, you know, systems are really complex, and you know, one person is not going to change a system, right? It's going to take genuinely, we can only get there with so many people with very diverse perspectives, seeing different little nooks and crannies of the mountain, taking it on together. And so this question of how do we develop collective leadership? You know, how do we both make the really intentional effort to develop many diverse, locally rooted leaders who can take on complex challenges and create the space for them so that they can build relationships and work towards shared vision in collaborative ways? I think that is the central question, not only in education, but in many, many systems. In fact, we've helped, worked with many others to, you know, foster this community that we call the People First Community, which is all about this idea that if we want sustainable development, we need to move from what has historically often been an intervention-led approach, where we're trying to scale up, you know, discrete solutions, towards a people-first approach that first invests in collective leadership as and under the theory that they will then drive the solution making and ultimately their own development.
That is a extraordinary, insightful, and I think helpful way of ending. So I'd like to thank you very, very much, not just for your time, but for your contribution to a sector which is absolutely essential to equity, to the efforts that we are trying to make to lead, to produce a more fair and a more just world, and one that's capable of responding to these really profound and existential challenges that we're all facing. So thank you for your time and thank you for your contribution.
Thank you so much, Paul. Really appreciate the discussion.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations. Please do subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about Wendy and the work for Teach for All, please visit their website. And for more information about the Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.